Let's continue with our second talk today, and this speaker is Gil Shah, and the title is Topological Quantified Truth Theory.
So, thank you. So, of course, I first want to heartily thank you and Anton and all the non-local organizers for inviting us here, which looks wonderful, but we haven't had time yet to explore. So, I'm going to talk about topological Wolf-Dietrich-Miller theory, and that probably requires an explanation because, well, probably many of you know what Wolf-Dietrich-Miller theory is about, but what I'm going to talk about is something which has been developed in the past few years, and it's another brand of Wolf-Dietrich-Miller theory. It's not complete. There are things, parts which are still lacking. So I worked on these things with Marco Bolci. Yeah, I should write his name, because it's really a joint work with Marco Bolci, who had several very good ideas, I think. And so it's a version of Grothendieck-Teichmuller theory, which is not only Grothendieck-Teichmuller theory. The title could also be Profinite Teichmuller theory without Grothendieck. It's not too. And so what is this all about? Maybe assuming that not everybody is totally familiar with all the brands of Grothendieck-Teichmuller theory, I will recall just a few things about the history and try to pin down what I'm trying to talk about, really. So let's say I would say that there are four main threads leading to Grothendieck-Teichmuller theory. One is, and then I'll put some keywords, and only one or two will be what I would be really talking about. So one is the esquisse d'un programme, which probably everybody knows somehow. The other one is Ihara's Altes Traum. The third one would be the mean P1 minus 3 points. And the fourth one would be, of course, Renita. So maybe I'll recall that if you have a group, say G of the finite discrete finite degenerative group. Okay, so then to it you can associate several completions. So on the left you have the profinite completions. So you have G hat. Well, I guess you know what it is. So here will be profinite, and here will be proalgebraic. So you have profinite, and then as a quotient, you have the pro-nilpotent completion. But this is nothing that the product of all primes of the pro-L completions. And then on this side, you have the, I write it this way, the pro-unipotent completion, which is actually a functor. So let's say G pro uni of a ring R will be the group-like element of the completed group ring with respect to the ideal. To the augmentation ideal. Sending G to R. Okay, and then these things, G pro L, you have a map from G pro L to G pro uni of Q L. Okay, so you have this sort of map of completions of a nice group which means discrete, which means finitely generated group. Here in the esquisse, what we're talking about is the full profinite completion, so the thing which is G over N for all N normal in G and profinite. So, for instance, because G is Because G is finitely generated, characteristic subgroups, invariant subgroups, invariant cofinite subgroups are a cofinal sequence. Cofinal sequence. So in this case, you're talking about this, and this is what I will be talking about, but not only for cofinite. In all the others, you're essentially talking about the pro-unipotent completion.
With the exception of Grinchbell's famous article, which I'll come back to very shortly.
So he had asked, so if you want, slogans, mottos, here you could say non-abelian, and I won't say anything about it, because I don't know much about it. So Yatsutaka Hirai would envision it partly, as he says, as a non-abelian Iwasawa theory. Yeah. The lean P1 minus 3 points, the motto would be, probably, motives, but a very small part of motives, namely mixed states. It's a very, very small region of motives. But it's nice because it's unconditional. And there's a turning point. If you read the introduction to this paper, it's really interesting. There's a turning point at one sentence. There's one sentence where you can see everything. You can also see psychological things from Récolte Sommaire, because Deligne says, but Rosenig explained to him that he should look at the profinite pi 1 and the action of Galois and blah blah blah. And then he says, but I don't know what to do with that. So I will use motives instead. But when you use motives, motives are completely connected with pro-unipotent completions. So maybe I should also recall that when you use pro-unipotent completion, in some sense, you lose a lot compared to this. Okay? Because in terms of Galois group, this is like using only nilpotent extensions of Q, of the Galois group of Q. So Grinchbell, I would say that the motto would be universal deformation theory. Universal deformation of what? Universal deformation of associativity and commutativity, especially associativity. And what I would like to try and explain, that what we're trying to rig up, say, is profinite deformation theory. So, this is very special because deformation theory basically assumes that you can linearize somehow, and that you have some sort of tangent space or tension whatever. Whereas in almost by definition, when you work with full profinite completion, you have nothing like, you can't linearize anything. So I'll show you, so there will be two things. Profinite deformations. And I want to show you something which all of you probably know what an associator is. I would like to show you what a profinite associator is. And let me just write this down. A profinite associator, and then I hope at some point it will become clearer. What is a profinite associator? It's something which is, it's just, of course I will explain. It's an embedding of the completion of the profinite Penz complex, Penz graph, into something which is essentially the profinite curve graph. Okay, you're not supposed to understand right now. And the second motto, which is connected to this one, is...
S is a Riemann surface.
Sorry?
What's S? S is a Riemann surface.
Oh, sorry. S is a... Yes, I'll just come back to this. S is SGN is the module surface of genus G, and you don't need it to be equipped with any. It's just purely topological.
So, anybody who's gone to a lecture on Anabelian geometry will have heard the phrase group theoretic many times. And in some sense, we're trying to replace, not replace, but go from group theoretic to graph theoretic. But of course, I should have had, but here it's the same, profinite group theoretic and profinite group theoretic. Okay, so much for...
Pierre, what's the big prize?
Sorry?
What's the big prize?
The big prize...
If we succeed with everything...
If we succeed with everything, we'll have... Okay. What are the things you would like to understand? Well, first, let me tell you a story. In the early 70s, even in the early 60s, André Weil said, if you want to study a group, you let it act on something which is very highly connected. And the proposal, and then Quillen came and he wanted to develop higher K theory. And then he let the reductive groups act on their buildings. And the buildings are very highly connected. And then you let these algebraic groups act on the buildings. And the stabilizers are basically of the same kind, and then you have some sort of induction. Then what happened in the early 80s? What happened in the early 80s is people were looking for instance, just a little bit of notation. S is SGN, so again, S is just a model topological surface for the time being, G, of genus G with N punctures or poles or whatever, is of course which is hyperbolic, and the dimension, which is implicitly the modular dimension, the dimension of the ascending moduli space, is this. Okay. So attached to this, you have the Teichmuller group, which is nothing but the mapping class group, so gamma GN. And you have all sorts of things, which I'll detail a little bit. So you have the Teichmuller space, you have the moduli space, here you have, this is a covering, so this is, you can see it as an orbifold, a stack, many things, but for the time being, let's say it's a complex orbifold. Okay, you have this, and then you have certain complexes which I've come back to. Well, complexes in the sense of topology. So I will use 4. Sorry. And what is it you want to? So okay, in the early 60s, in the early 80s, or in the 80s. What people wanted to understand, for instance, was things like the stability of the cohomology of these groups. Okay? In the early 70s, people wanted to understand the stability of the cohomology of the, say, SLNs, or the reductive groups, okay, the series of reductive groups. In the early 80s, they wanted to do this, to understand the stability of the cohomology of this, of these groups, and they succeeded. I mean, discrete groups, of course. And how did they do that? They let this group act on all these things. Actually, this one would be enough for now. So what are these things? I'm not assuming you know these complexes. Nowadays, they've been studied for themselves by topologists. They're like coarse-grained version of Teichmuller space, and topologists have been studying them very, very thoroughly. And there are theorems which to us are not necessarily relevant, like something is Gromov hyperbolic or things like that, for instance. So what is C of S? C of S is the curve complex. C of S is the curve complex. So if there are there are topologists in the room, so I should not use complex and simplicial sets without distinguishing. Actually, these things, you can view them as simplicial sets. Simplicial sets. So C of S is the curve complex, and what I have to tell you is what a simplex is. So a simplex of dimension k. So, well, I draw this, and a k-simplex. K-simplex equal k plus 1 non-intersection simple roots on the curve. Okay? So, these things. Blah, blah, blah. So this is up to isotropy. Non-intersecting means there are representatives which do not intersect. One way to say it is that if you put any hyperbolic metric of curvature minus one, and you in any homotopy class there is only one loop, and then if you draw the loops that I just drew, but given the metric, then they will not intersect. So these are representatives, for instance. Okay, so this is a case simplex. Now CP of S is the so-called Penn's complex. So it's two-dimensional. Normally it's two-dimensional, but I described the Penn's graph because that's all we need. Plus there's a theorem actually, which tells you, which we reproved, which tells you that the two cells are determined by the one cells. So you don't really need the two cells. Well, you do need, but sometimes, but I don't need to define them. So Penn's complex means, or Penn's graph means vertices equal Penn's decomposition. So Penn's decomposition means maximal simplices of C of S. So the Penn's decomposition are simply the maximal simplices of this. So there are 3G minus 3, D of S curves. Okay, so it's a simplex with D of S. This is, as I mentioned, D of S minus 1. So if you take D of S curves, then it's a Penn's decomposition. And then you have edges. And the edges, the edges, you have to say something, this is very important. So the edges, there are two kinds. So it's genus 0 or genus 1. And genus 0 is type 0, 4. Genus 1 is this. So you say that, how do I call Penn's decomposition? Yeah, there is an edge between P and P prime. If and only if we have all PS minus 1 loops in common, and the last one, which is the only one, the only two which are different, and the last one differs by the simple loop. The last ones, and I'll tell you what it is, by a simple move. And by simple move means if you're in genus 0, you move this to this, and if you're in genus 1, you move this to this. So formally, you have two loops. If you're in genus 1, they intersect at only one point. If you're in genus 0, they intersect at two points, and the algebraic intersection is 0. So the geometric intersection is 2, and the algebraic intersection is 0. Okay, so this is the Penn's, the curve complex, the Penn's complex. Then I'll add somewhere this, which we actually introduced this, although it's very simple, but you will see it's very useful. It's very simply connected with the others. This is a graph. So the edges, the vertices are the same. Penn's decomposition, maximal simplices. And the edges are It's even simpler. If they differ by only one leaf, it doesn't matter how the last two are, where they are. They have yes minus one leaf in common. So of course you have CP. CP will always be just a graph, which is of course in this quite simply because. Quite simply because here you demand that the two be differ by just one simple move, and here you don't ask for anything. So here I'm saying something a bit ahead of time, but this thing, so let me say something which can sound philosophical, but this is one of the things we will implement more or less. Here what you're saying, when two things differ by a simple move, what you're saying is you have a rule for minimal intersection. Let's concentrate on this. This is okay, but I mean, okay, this may be the best case. Anyway, the two differ by comfort. It's not very different. So here you have a rule, you say two loop intersect minimally, if they intersect at one point, okay? Now, we will go to profinite complexes, profinite simplicity, profinite everything. Not groups, I mean, yes, groups of course, but not only groups, profinite geometric objects. Profinite geometric objects are a bit of a terra incognita. Maybe I still haven't answered Brock's question. Slowly, okay. So, what we're trying to do is the study of profinite surfaces. Profinite topological surfaces. So if you have a surface and it has a metric, you say two loops are close if they're close. If I draw a surface like this, and I draw two loops, when you think that they're close in a profinite way? That's something you don't see. What does it mean to say that gamma and gamma prime? This is certainly not the case, but it has to be something that horrible. You say gamma and gamma prime are close if gamma prime is equal to is nothing but g of gamma, where g is in the mapping property. So we do at time consider that's something that was not done for, you know, we're trying to, because we know that gamma of s is pi line of mgn, but as you know, it's also pi zero of m of s, but it's also pi zero of the oriented diffeomorphisms of the surface. Okay, and we're trying not to forget this. Okay, this is the mapping class group. This is Teichmuller group. I mean, very cool. And we're trying not to forget this. We're not forgetting this. So here, two things are close if they differ by, not only by this, this is very easy, okay? To differ by an element of the mapping class group means you're simply of the same type. Meaning if you cut the surface along gamma and gamma prime, then you get two surfaces which are homomorphic. That's very easy. What is less, not less easy, is to be in a group of a very, very high index. So n gamma n, very, very large. These are two curves which are close. That's something which is very hard to see. You don't see it, actually. So it means simply that the index of n in gamma is very, very large. And these are, by definition, this is your topology. This is a profinite topology on the curves of your surface. Okay? I'll say other things of the kind later, probably. So here you have a rule. You say two curves intersect in a minimal way. if they intersect at one point. That's very easy. Now, if you take profinite loops, which I'll define, you don't have an intersection index. And maybe for I should remind you that Thurston theory of surfaces, diffeomorphism surfaces, start by defining an intersection index. If you don't have an intersection index with value, well, with value in something, of course, in ordinary topology, that it has values, it takes values in Z, just ordinary numbers. But in profinite topology, whatever that means, because it hardly exists, you don't have an intersection index. And one way to understand what Grinfeld did in a very different way from that, and that's what I find really exciting, it's very, very different from what people usually say, is an associator is nothing but a rule for minimal intersection index. Here you have this, you have one and only one, you have a very natural possibility, which is obvious. And you will see that in the profinite case, it's completely different. And you will see that these associators are definitely, probably, up to very little, which I'll explain, a torsor under the Gaussian-Lichtenstein group. So let me first summarize certain things. I'm almost done with... I want to summarize certain things about the discrete situation. So let me define this. This you have to define like this. This is the R complex. So the R complex is, you take your surface, you make it a little cleaner, and you need at least one point, at least one mark point. So P equals P1, Pn, and you need an N at least one. That's also well known. It's also well known that the theory is always slightly easier for n bigger than 1. In algebraic terms, they say that you have affine curves and not projective curves, and that makes things easier. But here, it's for the definition, you need, any number, doesn't matter, but at least 1. And then an arc is what you think. An arc is something joining 2 points. Okay? And a K-simplex, is that's what you think too. It's K plus 1 arcs, non-intersecting arcs. Okay, so you're armed with all these complexes. I shouldn't say simplicity complexes, I should say simplicial sets. So these things, okay? So what do you do with them? Or what did they do, or what did we do 25 years ago with the exactly these objects in the discrete setting?
And suddenly mention the names, you say they do and you.
Oh, sorry, no. Maybe I should mention names. So names would be, obviously, John Parra, Ivan, I forgot his first name. Ivanov. I forgot his first name. Nikolai Ivanov. Hacker. I also forgot. Yeah, Alan Hacker. Plus many, many, many people. Probably.
That was just before the Iron Curtain ceased to exist.
So there was really these two parallel things which were developed in Moscow, and I don't know where exactly Harrow was. So you almost follow, you do follow, and also, sorry, I should at least mention Harvey. If I want to be fair, I want to mention William Harvey, who is the one who invented this. And of course, somewhere deep down, there's always Jean-Pierre Serre. Always has to appear somewhere. And rightly so, because Harvey had a conversation with Serre, And Sarah, explain the Borel Sarah Bordification of arithmetic spaces. And that's how it all started. Because he explained to Harvey that in order to Bordify Teichmuller space, you should do what they've done. There's a long-standing analogy between arithmetic spaces and, symmetric spaces and Teichmuller spaces. And so Harvey saw that in order to Bordify Teichmuller space, you want to add something which is like buildings. And this is the analog of buildings. And now, if you want to follow sort of Weyl's recipe, you have to know what the homotopy types of these people are like. And the crux of the matter is that A of SP, so let's say that P is just one point, okay? P is one point. You don't care, then there are many variants, but you don't care. So you say that, of course, let's say D of S is, so P is one point. D of S is bigger than 2, I mean, otherwise, but it doesn't matter. They're very, as usual, they're small dimension exceptions, but that's not the problem. And the theorem is that this is contractive. This is really the crux of the matter. And this is a very funny history, that theorem, because it was first proved by Haarer and Ivanov in a very, very heavy way. It was very complicated. So one of them, I mean Haarer, used lamination, Thurston's lamination. And so that's a paper in Annals of Math, 1985. And Ivanov, which is a paper in Rouspéry, 1970. Ivanov used Cerf theory. So it's global Morph theory on surfaces. But then, there was really a surprise. Hatcher came, 1999, and he gave a totally elementary, 2-page-long proof. You don't need to know anything. I can show it to you not now, because, I mean, it would really occupy, like, less than 10 minutes. And you don't need to know anything. So that came really as to me it's really a surprise, that because this is really the crux of the matter. Once you know this, then it's not difficult to prove. I could also add somebody who is, everybody knows, Mumford, who did something, who introduced this, basically. So these things are really fundamental objects in Teichmuller theory, in ordinary Teichmuller theory. So then you prove that this is a wedge of spheres of certain dimension, which I don't want to. It's 2g minus 3 if n equals 0. And then you let this, maybe I should have mentioned, but that's sort of obvious, this acts on everybody. Okay, but just you take a loop and you map it to wherever this maps it. Okay, you have a diffeomorphism. Everything is up to hypotopy, so you map every loop just by your diffeomorphism. And then so this acts on this, and then you follow essentially Weyl's recipe. I think it can be attributed to Weyl or maybe before, I don't know. You let it act on all these simplicial sets, possibly essentially on this one, and then that tells you things about the cohomology of these groups with constant coefficients. Okay, let me simply say that our fundamental conjecture in the end turns out to be that, I mean, it took us a lot, some time to understand that what we're doing is that this, the profinite thing, is contractible. But then I have to explain what contractible means in the profinite context. So this is slightly ahead of time. So the conjecture, the central conjecture is this. The profinite R complex So this is profinite R complex. Is contractible. I should say weakly contractible because contractible doesn't mean anything. Okay. Then let me just go on a little bit with the discrete situation. Then when people started, okay, at first these were like, you know, they were not objects which were considered for themselves, they were considered as, things with, that helps you understand this. But then they took a life for themselves, and they began being studied for themselves. And then you can ask, what are the automorphism groups of these people? And the answer is, that's again Haro and Ivanov, again, that you have an exact sequence. So, I write it this way. Like this. So what does it tell you? It tells you, why is it, okay, so first gamma, I write the inner automorphism of gamma of S, but when gamma of S, if the center of gamma of S is 1, which is almost always the case, then this is just gamma of S. And this is almost always true, except because here I'm assuming that ds is bigger or greater 2. Okay, so essentially, but I prefer to write it this way. Essentially, it tells you that the automorphism group of C of S of the curve complex are nothing but just the element of gamma of S, which we saw acts on it. Okay, it produces automorphism, that's all there is, except the Z-mod 2, which of course is just the mirror image. Now, if you want to be fancy, you write it this way, but the point is that this will not be fancy, because the point is to show that here, maybe you want to have this, this, and here you have the Boltzmann detachment group, which contains the Galois group of Q and may be equal to the Grandmann group. And instead of writing GT, I assume that.
So you write another one, another sequence for.
So if for hat.
For red, then with.
Yes.
Separately.
Separately, it simply means in gamma hat. Yeah. Alt. The thing which is not conjectural if is I replace the profinite completion by the congruent completion. Maybe I'll explain this. If I replace profinite by procongruent, then it's true.
This gamma is
Goldenbichler. Okay, say S generic. And I explain what S generic is. What I call generic is very, very simple. S generic means S contains a subsurface of type 1.3. So what does it mean? It's very, very simple. It simply means that you can cut S so as to obtain one piece, which is this. But that simply means that the genus of S is positive, and what? S is not equal, type of S is I mean, Gn is not 2, 0 or 1, 3, and that's it. No, even 2, 0 is okay. No, sorry, 2, 0 might be okay. No, 2, 0 is not okay. So this is very simple. This is it. So if, so, okay, so and then this Gaultier-Lichtwagner, which is this essentially the one we constructed with Leila and Hiroaki, except for, there's a tiny difference again. But, okay, that's for specialists. And GQ is here. The Galois group of Q is here. This is this is it, and all this live in the automorphism group of cross-binary group of two generators. So this, and to be completely honest, I have to add this. This is also something I can explain. There are many, many items. I'm sorry, but there are many things which, the thing which is, I think, attractive is that there are many things coming from many places, and many analogies which are very precise, and so it's bound to be a little complicated. So what does, well, no, let me not explain this talk. I try to explain at the same time what we have, which is discrete, and where we are heading to. So this thing.
How is it without connected to the contractibility of this? Separate thing, or is
it? To the contractibility of this. To this. How do you prove this result? Sorry, how do you prove this? Sorry, I should know. I should know, but I don't at the moment. So this tells you that this, and also another thing which is proof, I can put this here. Okay, so the Pans complex and the curve complex have the same automorphism group, and it's just boring because it's simply basically gamma of S or Z mod 2 extended by gamma of S, which is simply the mapping class group including non-oriented, you know, it's just this that you include non-oriented or homomorphism. And the big surprise will be that the analog of this here, I cannot put P at all. That the proof, I say only one sentence and then I go back. So the profinite Pans complex will turn out to be rigid and not at all this way. Okay, so let me stop here for a moment. What do I want to say? How much time do you have before the break?
It's 43 minutes since the beginning, and 41 seconds.
So let's say another, what is it I can explain? I explain the two group theoretic conjectures about gamma. So, about gamma of S, there are at least two group theoretic conjectures. I mean, there are many, but one is gamma of S a good group? And does it have the congruent subgroup property? Congruent subgroup property. So these are two main conjectures about these groups. So again, I take S not to be a factor. I mean, okay, as usual. This will always be true. So the expected answers are yes and yes. And what do I want to say about these things?
What is CSP?
Congruence of group property. Oh, I explain what congruence of group property. Let me explain what the congruence of group property is. So you have gamma of S, and then you have phi of S. Okay, and then if you take a characteristic subgroup of phi 1 of S, characteristic meaning an invariant subgroup of phi 1 of S, okay, then you have a map from gamma of S to the automorphism group of phi 1 of S mod K. That is, it simply means that you take a diffeomorphism of your surface, you let it act on the pi 1, and since K is characteristic, it's mapped to itself, so you induce it this K invariant cofinite. And then you can take the kernel, and this we call gamma sub K. So this gamma sub K is what is called a principal congruent subgroup in this situation. Not to be confused with a principal congruent subgroup for SLN Z, for instance. It's a non-abelian version of congruent subgroups. And the question here is, does it have the CSP? Means R B gamma K cofinal in gamma. Which means, does any cofinite subgroup contain such a group? So this is unknown. This is known until dimension 5. But this is unknown for... usually in Teichmann theory, things which are difficult start with G equals 3. Unknown for gamma 3. Gamma 3 meaning gamma 3 0. So what we're doing here is completely different from what we will hear about in several lectures, which is MZVs and so on, which are typically genus zero. Maybe I should add some remarks because it is a bit exotic with respect not only to the subject of this conference, but with respect to what people usually do. So when you go to what should I say? I mean, there are many things you can say. We'll hear a lot about the genus 0 and genus 1 case. Okay? And this is not fortuitous. Well, first, these are low general cases. But if you go to pro-unipotent completion, you cannot treat the higher genera, quite simply because gamma G... the first thing you stumble on is that gamma G is a perfect group. So you cannot build the pro-unipotent completion so simply. There are ways to do with the pro-unipotent completion, but it becomes very complicated. You need to speak about Torelli groups, you need to speak about SP2G of Z, and so on, and this has not been done. Okay, so it's something which should be attacked, is say the pro-unipotent version of the higher genus pro-unipotent version of the theory, but has never been even touched upon. Here it's completely different. For instance, here these things are easy in genus 0 and 1. They've been known for a long time. But this is unknown for gamma 3, for instance. Another way also to put this conjecture, which algebraic geometers will prefer, is that we have an exact sequence like this. So, what is this exact sequence? This exact sequence is the one which is derived from this vibration. So this is completely classical. So you have the moduli space. You have Mg n plus 1, which is nothing but the universal curve over this. Then you have a fiber. The fiber is precisely the curve. The fiber, let's say, I don't know how to call it, Fgn. I mean, it has a fiber, and the fiber has fundamental group isomorphic to this, and these things are k pi 1, so you have a shorter multiple sequence, and this is it. And that gives you, and this is exact. I mean, this is an exact sequence. This also gives you, actually, the fact that you have this. IGN. So these things are very old, and this is what you do to Nielsen in the 20s, say. And maybe here I can say what the star is. The star is means, okay, from... You have many translations. From the point of view of algebraic geometry, with the inertia preserving, it means that you preserve the loops around. You cannot map. If you have a loop which goes around a hole or a puncture, you have to map it to a loop from the puncture. This has a translation in moduli term, which I omit, but maybe we'll come to it. And then I can take the profinite completion of this sequence. Why does it remain? It's interesting. It remains exact. Okay, if you take the profinite completion of a short exact sequence, it's not necessarily left exact, but here it is left exact. So this is exact too. And but this may not be the case. But if you take the image, so this gives you an alteration of this on this. So it gives you a map from this to this. But it may not be the case that this is an isomorphism. And the image of this map is precisely, so that's a good exercise. It's a very good exercise, so you can check. I mean, it's just tracing through definition. There is nothing to prove. By tracing through definitions, you will see that the image of this thing is precisely what is called the pro-congruence completion, which is the limit of gamma mod gamma k over k, as here. So let me write. Okay, I'll confuse the image and the thing itself, and I write it with a check. So this is the pro-congruence completion. Then you have a canonical projection, like this. And the congruence subgroup, the congruence conjecture, which is also due, as a conjecture, it's attributed to Ivanov. It asks whether this is an isomorphism. And maybe before stopping, I can still, it's really good to translate and retranslate. What is it you're doing here? Then it's becoming, you can retranslate it again in a completely different language. That's where there's so many things. So let's try to translate it in modular terms. So in modular terms, you have what you want is you want to find, okay, after all, gamma gn hat is the pi 1 of this, okay? So it's something which will act on all the coverings of this. One of the difficulties of the theory is that you have to produce many coverings, many covers, many unramified covers of this, if you want to say something. So people have produced tons of unramified covers, but they always come from these people. And the congruence, basically the congruence subgroup property asked, do all the covers of, can any cover of the moduli space be dominated by a cover which comes from a cover of the surface itself? So you see, you have this object, which is very complicated. You have this object, which is much less complicated a priori, the surface itself. And you take the covers of this surface, and you get subgroups like K. And the congruent subgroup properties says basically all the covers you will manufacture for this object, they simply come from this. If you can prove this, they will make things much easier. And maybe I should say that this implies the congruent subgroup property. So for instance, this thing implies the congruent subgroup property. It implies many other things. Because I'll say one thing I sort of like is that there are many conjectures, but then this, for instance, this implies almost everything. Just there are just one or two principles now which sort of imply everything. Another thing, is everything I'm saying, you can always do with this completion, gamma hat, instead of gamma hat. Oh, sorry, instead gamma check instead of gamma hat. And things are much easier. So, if you can do everything with gamma check, and then you know this, and then if anybody comes and says, I've proved the congruent subgroup property, then the two things are equal, and everything works. So many things I say are just true for the congruent congruent subgroup property, or are true for the pro-congruence completion. And so it would be true for the profile application if congruent subgroup property is proved. Okay, let me start.
Thank you.
And the notion of this check is well defined for this set in this AS.
This is the definition. Oh, sorry, this is the definition. Gamma check is this.
No, I'm asking for this AS. And all others,
And then after the break, I'll come to more completions of complexes and so on.
More questions at this point? Yeah, I have a very naive question, because in passing you said that for genus, it would be difficult to do this pro-uniform story,
mm-hmm.
because one needs to look at the Torelli group. And
yeah.
Up to now, all the talks were telling us in great detail and length about the completions of the group algebra of the Torelli group with respect to the augmentation ideal.
Uh-huh.
So,
well, that's
how does it?
No, that's completely irrelevant. I don't know anything about this. Yeah, so
okay.
You have. That's precisely right. So yeah, I mean, I don't know how you did it. Well, how did you know the Torelli groups then?
I don't know, IGN or TG or K or K.
Well, let's say it's whatever.
Yeah.
And then you have SPGZ.
Yeah.
One. And yes, and definitely. So I know this is for topologists, this is an object of the current object of study, of which I know very little. So I strongly encourage them to let us know more about these people. And certainly, if you have you don't have to have this, but what you really need is relative completions, and what you need to do is complete relatively to a subgroup of this, which is torsion free. So this is virtually torsion free. So take this map to, tell me if I'm wrong, then the kernel is, the kernel of this is torsion free now. For the kernel of this map, I don't know how to call it, this is torsion free. So this is finite. So you really want to. You really want to take the relative pro-uniform completion with respect to the subgroup which is torsion free, and that would be enough to, and then you can start working. But it's probably difficult. I mean, it's not something which will come for free, and I know very little about this. I mean, zero.
Any more questions at this point?
Yeah, if not, I suggest let's have a 10-minute break.
Mm-hmm.